The content of this podcast is provided for general informational and entertainment purposes only and is not intended as legal advice. The content of this podcast does not establish an attorney-client relationship between the hosts or the guests and the general audience. If you need specific legal advice for your legal matter, please contact an attorney in your area. This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. This show examines the latest legal topics and news facing families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. It is hosted by lawyers Rob Schenck and Will Smith of Schenck Smith LLC, a personal injury law firm based in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome to the show. Hello out there and welcome to episode 51 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
Welcome to 2018 again. How many weeks in a year? 52?
52.
So we've almost done, I guess we've done this for a year, but we haven't done we introduced weekly. So we took 2 weeks off. That's what we're not quite.
Took 2 weeks off. Yeah.
So we're not quite yet for season two yet. We haven't started season two yet, really. And if this was a TV show.
Because it hasn't actually been a year.
Yeah, we got to get 52 episodes in.
Yeah. Okay.
I feel like that's because I don't know if I'm going to be able to get to it this time, but I feel like in the next couple weeks, I think I might do a season two type. You know how season one of Family Ties or Dukes of Hazzard, the intro didn't start the same as the first season. Like they maybe new characters were added. You know what I'm saying? Like,
okay.
I'm thinking about redoing our intro, and new music, things like that, because it'll be season two. Like, I know how we're going to let people know that it's season two of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast if we don't change the intro up.
No, I'm with you. That's important.
Yeah, it's very important. So anyway. Happy Martin Luther King Day.
Happy MLK Day.
MLK Day. As this goes to air, it will be January 15th of 2018, as we celebrate Martin Luther King across the country. And we are not taping this on Martin Luther King Day. However, there is a Martin Luther King Day marathon, a half marathon, and I think 5K, and I want to do one of those three. So hopefully by the time this airs, I will be finishing or starting actually one of those three races. But I don't know which one I'm going to do yet.
A marathon or a 5K?
No, it's a 5K, half marathon, a marathon. And you can choose to do one of those. You know what I'm saying? Everybody starts running together, but some people are going to run 26 miles. Some people
For me, I don't understand the debate between doing a marathon and a 5K. Why wouldn't you do the 5K? Who wants to run 26 miles?
I mean, a lot of people do. It just depends on where your head's at. It would be much more difficult for me to run as hard as I can for 3 miles versus run leisurely for 26 miles.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us in the program. And we have, again, for the second week in a row, who do we have as a guest, Will?
So we have Richard Armin, who is my friend.
Just your friend.
Yeah, just my friend. Richard was on with us last time, and like we told you last time, he was a prosecutor for almost a decade. In Gwinnett County Solicitor's Office and in Gwinnett County, in the Gwinnett County District Attorney's Office. Interesting fact that we forgot to mention last time is that at one point, Richard's trial partner was the co-founder of King of Pops, Nick Carson.
Nick Carse. I actually graduated Nick Carse and from Georgia State College of Law in 2008, and he went on to the Gwinnett Solicitor's Office.
Hey, wait. Right. No, Richard, when did you graduate?
I graduated in May of 2007.
So you were a year ahead of Rob. Yeah, okay. And you probably wouldn't have remembered Rob. I don't think that Rob was very popular in law school.
With Richard, but I was very popular in law school with the ladies.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, Richard was a phenomenal trial attorney for 10 years as a prosecutor, started his own practice. Now he does plaintiff's personal injury and wrongful death cases. His office is located just a mile from the Gwinnett County Courthouse. And we are, again, going to put his contact information up there. Gene, if you will do that. The last time that Richard last week that he was on here, he talked about a case that he specifically prosecuted as an ADA. But there was another case that gained some pretty wide coverage in the news media, the case of Lisa Williams, that while Richard didn't prosecute this case himself, his office did while he was there. Richard, do you remember this case in Gwinnett County?
I do. It took place in the Superior Court courtroom where I was the supervising assistant district attorney over two other assistant district attorneys. However, this particular case, at that time, the office had relatively recently started a special victims unit, and it was handled by the special victims unit prosecutor when the case got assigned to that courtroom. But I remember some of the proceedings taking place before the judge I was assigned to. And I was present and know some of the basic details of this case.
Okay, so let's do this then. Let's just go ahead and jump into the case, Richard, and you tell us, you know, the basic facts, who, what, when, where, why. Starting out with, when did this happen?
This was a case that happened back in 2016. It was one that the first time I got wind of it, I was watching the evening news. And it was a loved one who had suspected that his mother was being abused in a nursing home type facility. And based on that suspicion, he planted a camera in her room at the facility to try to observe if there was any abuse going on. And what the camera captured was quite shocking. Essentially, there was a nurse that basically punched his mother in the face. This is a wheelchair-bound elderly lady that was defenseless, basically. So it was quite shocking. And it ended up resulting in, based on that video evidence, the police took charges and the case was prosecuted by the SVU in the Gwinnett District Attorney's Office, one of the best prosecutors in the office, is one that handled it before the judge in Superior Court. It resulted in...
Go ahead.
It ultimately, with that type of evidence, resulted in this particular defendant entering a guilty plea just about a year ago. Looking at court records, it says sentenced on January 5th, 2017, so a little over a year ago was when this guilty plea was entered, and that statute we discussed last week, the 16-5-102, the exploitation and intimidation of elder persons statute, was used in this, and this one was the part of the statute involving willfully inflicting physical pain or physical injury upon an elder person. I believe, if I recall, there was also a charge of aggravated assault included on it. It was a 3-count indictment, 2 counts of the exploitation willful infliction of pain statute, and 1 count of aggravated assault. But it was the type of case that there was such strong evidence that I don't think there was much chance of a defense in the case, and it ended in a guilty plea to those charges.
Now, the evidence, there's a video in this, and we've actually got a video.
Gene, can we get the video up?
Have Gene, our producer, play this. So we're going to play this video, and just, you know, as a caution, it is pretty shocking.
Oof.
God.
Okay, so those that aren't able to watch this video, what we're looking at is a nurse or...
A CNA
that's just manhandling... The resident is wheelchair bound, so she's pushing him around, yelling at his face. It's just tragic. And this was as Richard said, it was a hidden camera that was placed in the room by the son. So that's at least you have some visual evidence of the actual crime being committed, which is, in our experience, fairly rare.
Yeah, against his mother. Just FYI, you were using the pronoun he. It is Just for clarification, anybody that's looking this up, it was...
What did I say?
You said he. The resident is a female. That's, not that it matters.
That's right. Yeah. I'm sorry. Okay.
Yeah, this man did this for his mother.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you... I guess you rarely have that kind of evidence in a case. Was there even any... I mean, did she enter the guilty plea at arraignment?
I don't believe it was at arraignment. January 5th of 2017. This was beyond the arraignment date, just looking at the clerk of court system.
So, I mean, what, you know, here's a question for you, too, and I know that a lot of people see cases like this, and they think, hey, you know, I need to put a camera or some kind of recording device into my mom's or my father's nursing home room. Can you give us just a broad perspective on recording other people in Georgia?
I can give a broad summary of the law.
Sure.
Not giving anyone legal advice here, of course.
Yeah.
But there, as to the law in Georgia, there's a specific statute that deals with when it is lawful for a person to do this type of surveillance videoing, because I've actually handled a case where I got assigned kind of a high profile case involving a law enforcement officer doing unlawful surveillance of a person, so I'm a little familiar with the statute.
Okay.
But it's the criminal penalties for unlawful recordings such as this is 16-11-62, OCGA 16-11-62. Mm-hmm. And it deals with that it's unlawful for a person in a clandestine manner intentionally to overhear, transmit, or record, or attempt to overhear, transmit, or record the private conversation of another, which will originate in any private place. And it goes on with other criminal violations of the statute, including recording. But the key thing is in any private place is where it's unlawful to do that. And there are definitions that are applicable to that criminal statute, which are found at 16-11-60. And under Georgia law, private place means a place where there is a reasonable expectation of privacy. And honestly, that is not a very good definition for our laws to have. That's a Fourth Amendment search warrant type term. It's a legal term of art. But essentially, in this particular case that we were talking about in Gwinnett Superior Court, this was not unlawful surveillance, and it would not be unlawful surveillance for an occupant of a room at a care facility when it's that person's own room to record their own room.
So you're in essence, then the charges would not be brought against the individual placing the camera by the state based on the I guess the CNA, you know, being a victim of the unlawful recording.
Yeah, exactly. The employee of the facility did not have a reasonable expectation of privacy in the private place applicable to her victim. But it can be complicated. For example, let's say a camera is placed by a loved one in a room where the loved one has the ability to not want that to happen. The loved one could potentially be committing a crime against their loved one for surveilling the room. It would have to be a situation where the loved one, if capable of being able to consent to acts, was mentally able to, would have to give consent to the recording taking place. But
it's also a big deal.
The nurse would not have a reasonable expectation of privacy in her victim's private place, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, it does. And it's also a big deal when you're dealing with the vast majority of nursing home rooms, which are semi-private and have other people in there. And we only bring that up because we've talked about this on a couple of different podcasts. You know, should I put a recording in my mother or father or loved one's nursing home residence? Well, all I can tell you is that we, neither ourselves nor Mr. Armin, are giving any legal advice on that. And I can say that the law on Georgia is you know, not quite as clear as it should be. So, you know, I would, you know, I would suggest that, people take that into consideration before they do something like that. But go ahead, Richard.
What I was going to say, for example, if it's your own house, you can record what's going on in your own house.
Which we do.
You're not violating someone else's reasonable expectation of privacy to what goes on in your house. And when you are a resident and you're paying for that particular room in a facility, you as the resident have a reasonable expectation of privacy in that particular room.
Mm-hmm.
The nurse does not, is what I glean from the law. And again, I can't give anyone legal advice on that, but it can be very useful evidence in either a criminal case or obviously if you were ever to get a civil case with that type of evidence, it would be incredibly useful evidence to be able to present to a jury in the case.
And it was,
or in settlement negotiations with an insurance company.
And it was in this case. And I guess that's, you know, at the end of the day, so this, I guess she was represented by counsel, or was she have a court-appointed attorney?
Yeah, I believe it was a court-appointed attorney.
Okay.
That handled her defense in the case. There were actually several attorneys before the case got resolved. Otherwise, it probably would have been resolved sooner than it was. But just looking at the court's history, I think there were about three total attorneys on the case before it was finally resolved.
And what is what was she charged under?
She was charged with two counts of 16-5-102, which is the elder person statute that criminalizes willfully inflicting physical pain or physical injury on an elder person, and one count of aggravated assault.
And Richard, are you aware of, in this case or maybe in any other cases, involving a CNA or a staff of a long-term care facility, any defenses that they bring up? So, for example, self-defense, or just doing my job, or they were being unruly, that kind of thing. Do you have any understanding as to whether or not those type of defenses were made in this case or other cases under this exploitation statute?
In this particular case, I think criminal liability was pretty clear-cut. I have had other cases during my time as a prosecutor where liability was disputed, criminal liability was disputed, where there were injuries to a person in a care facility. The particular case I'm thinking of was not an elder person, but a disabled adult, but the law applies equally to disabled adults and elder persons. But certain injuries on the person, it was disputed whether they were due to routine type injuries that a person could get inflicting them on themselves or through accidental causes versus it being a case of either neglect or willful infliction of physical pain. I have seen that where it is hotly disputed and there's not evidence such as in the case we've been discussing with video evidence to sort of prove what had happened.
So what's the understanding this is a felony, so the penalties can begin at 1 year, but what's the maximum penalty if found guilty of this?
If found guilty under 16-5-102, the maximum penalty for one count of it is 20 years. It's a 1 to 20 year felony or a fine of not more than $50,000 or both.
So it's so the charge of elder assault or elder, I guess it was elder battery, that's used in place of actual battery. Is that because she's charged with assault here, but she wasn't charged with aggravated battery or just simple battery, right?
She one count in the indictment was for aggravated assault.
Okay.
But essentially, if a person inflicts physical pain or physical injury against a disabled adult, in what would essentially be potentially a misdemeanor battery charge when it is against against a person that, for example, is 40 years of age, when it's a willful infliction of the abuse. It can be a felony charge under Georgia law.
So,
the law recognizes, and the General Assembly of Georgia recognizes the importance of protecting elder persons and other persons in that category in the statute, disabled adults. and such.
So let's do this for a quick clarification, because we're running up on the end of this podcast here. What's the difference between assault and battery?
Assault doesn't require any type of contact. Battery requires contact from person to person, or some sort of infliction of contact, whether it's transferred contact. If you throw a baseball and hit a person, even though you don't touch them, that's a battery. If you threaten to throw the baseball at a person, that's a simple assault.
So what the Georgia legislature has done here is, in a case like this, the physical contact that occurred between this CNA and this nursing home resident, if she were just a regular person in the sense that she weren't an elder person or a disabled adult, it would have potentially been a misdemeanor battery, right?
In this particular case, she actually was convicted of aggravated assault. I don't have all the details of that case in front of me right now. I don't know if it involved, to the extent of beyond the video, what we saw, strangulation,
okay,
or the use of some sort of weapon against her. But
yeah,
but looking at the clerk of court system, count three was in fact aggravated assault. But let's say it went to the extent of a punch to the face that resulted in a black eye to the victim. That would be a felony under 16.5.102, when to any other person that doesn't fit in one of the protected categories, either a minor child under a cruelty to children statute, an elder person, a disabled adult, to a person that doesn't fit in one of those categories, that would be a misdemeanor offensive battery. So the law recognizes in Georgia the greater need for protection of people that cannot protect themselves.
So what happened to her? What happened to this defendant?
She, according to Gwinnett County court records, was sentenced to a term of 20 years to serve 4 years on the 16.5.102 crimes in counts 1 and 2, and an additional 5 years probation consecutive to those on the aggravated assault on count 3. So basically a total sentence of 25 years to serve the first 4 years in the state prison sentence system, with a balance of 21 years to be served on probation. And there would, of course, be other terms and conditions, fines, probably some sort of counseling courses, a no-contact order with the victim. And it's not uncommon in cases like that, with other conditions for protection of elder persons, to be put on a sentence, such as you can't work in that type of industry at all. You can't have unsupervised contact with other persons. I don't know if those were conditions, but it's pretty common to put those on a sentence for someone that commits a crime against another person.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And so is it common in your experience for, in terms of the restitution, like, is she going to be financially on the hook for the $50,000, or is it just usually just jail time? In other words, not, you don't pay the monetary fee or the penalty.
The maximum fine is $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
In Gwinnett County, on most felony cases where there's not some mandatory minimum fine, it's typical on a felony charge to assess a total fine of $1,500, and then there are applicable fees and surcharges on top of that.
That would go to the victim?
$50,000 fine was not assessed here.
Okay.
No, that would go to the state to pay for probation supervision. Well, there are monthly probation supervision fees also, but there are different state funds that criminal fine monies go into. In some parts, they go towards compensating victims for crimes.
I never knew that. I didn't realize that. So the restitution is restitution with the government.
Well, sometimes. Not all the time.
No. Okay. There is restitution also that can be paid to victims when there are monetary losses from crimes. For example, if a victim in an exploitation case had injuries, restitution could be applied in the criminal sentence. But anyone that is interested in seeking restitution in a criminal sentence should probably reach out to attorneys like Rob and Will to discuss that, because restitution can sometimes be more limited in a criminal case than it is in a civil case, and there can be more to collect through a civil process.
We need to have more guests
on the restitution in a criminal case.
Right.
Yeah.
We need to have more guests on the show that plug us.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good. That's fantastic. Richard, you're a wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, man.
You're fantastic. We really appreciate you coming on. Two weeks in a row starting. First guest of 2018.
Yeah, you are the first guest of 2018.
Bringing in the new year.
Happy New Year.
And is he the last guest of this season?
Yes.
Yes, so he's the first guest of 2018, but oddly enough, the last guest of season one.
Yeah, well, we're calling season one.
Yeah.
Which is 52 episodes.
52 episodes.
Yeah. Awesome, Richard. Thank you so much. I think that's it. So this podcast, as you may or may not know, maybe you're new for 2018. Maybe your New Year's resolution was to listen to this podcast.
Yeah.
So this is an audio and video podcast. So you can download the audio on Stitcher or iTunes or perhaps Spotify. Or you can watch us on our YouTube channel or on our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. We would love to see you again. And on behalf of Richard, we will see you next time.
And see you next time.
See you next time for real.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. And feel free to leave us some feedback. And for more information about the topics discussed in this episode, check out the show website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. That's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.